The Mary Sue Files, written by Capricious K and Fresney, read by Fresney, rating teen audiences and up, category male-female, fandoms Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Smallville, Lord of the Rings the movies, Invisible Man TV series, Highlander the series, Harry Potter and La Femme Nikita the television series. Relationships, Mary Sue and everyone. Summary, we're not evil, we just write that way. Mary Sue, realizing that she is a Mary Sue, goes on a road trip and has a lot of literary adventures with various and sundry. Some John Donne was abused in the course of this fic. Happy Sunny D. Finally, I saw the sun. I was bathed in real sunlight, not that crap that filters through the smog blanket that we always have over L.A. My first vacation in years was starting out right. Cherry red Mustang convertible? Check. Top down? Check. Sunglasses? Check. 3 weeks to wander wherever my fancy takes me? Check. I decided to avoid the big freeways and stick to smaller roads whenever possible. As a result, I was driving into my first small town just a few hours north of L.A. I hadn't been in a small town in years. This should be fun, I thought. They even have one of those cute welcome signs with the population on it. Yes, Sunnydale sounded friendly and quaint, and vaguely familiar. I should have just kept driving. As I came into the center of town, I noticed that all the standard hangouts, old movie theater, coffee shop, arcade, bookstore, magic shop. Wait, why the hell would a small town have a magic shop? I parked the car so I could take a closer look, flipping my raven locks over my shoulder and twitching my thin black leather jacket into place because I didn't want to blend in too much with the local yokels. But come to think of it, they were suspiciously homogeneously all white and relatively stylishly dressed. I was beginning to get a really bad feeling about this place. As I walked over to the magic box, I tried to pinpoint what exactly was wrong. When I opened the door and saw the place chock full of people, none of them customers, I realized that my bad feeling had grossly underestimated the situation, and I moaned with self-pity. One of the women immediately hurried over to me. She flashed a bright and avaricious smile and flipped her brown, no reddish, no blonde. Damn it, every time she moved, her hair seemed to change color. "Moaning is good," she said. "It indicates that you are desperate, which means I can overcharge you with impunity. Please tell me the exact nature of your distress so I know which items to jack up the prices on." The young everyman with dark hair groaned and put his head in his hands, but everyone else took the woman's money-grubbing in stride. I was still coming to terms with my realization, so I just ignored her. "Oh, I know." This was from the youngest person in the group, perky, cheerful, and possessing inhumanly straight and shiny brown hair. She must be the potential slayer from the prophecy, the one who's older and cooler than the other potentials, and who will help us defeat the first evil and prevent yet another apocalypse. You could be right, Dawn. Crap. I had been hoping for a modicum of sense from the hunky older gentleman, who, oddly enough, I expected to be wearing tweed. But he was dressed in a twill jacket, muted blue henley, and khakis. No internal dialogue about his hair. Maybe I could break free from this nightmare. The time convergence and planetary conditions are correct. Plus, wicked stylish with the hair and leather. Total indication of moral ambiguity, like the prophecy said. The redhead spoke up to dash my hopes and display a cute wrinkled nose as she pondered my appearance in their midst. I moaned some more, because the shame of my position was just overwhelming. The petite blonde, wearing a halter top that showed an amazing amount of skin, given the fact that everyone else was wearing long sleeves and or a jacket, got up and came over to me. "I know this seems overwhelming, to find out that one day that you have a destiny, and your life will never again be the same. To know you'll never be the carefree girl that you were, and that a normal life is forever denied you. I've been there. I know what it's like. I'm the chosen one, and I'll never have the chance to marry some hot guy, have kids, and grow old. You get used to it." "Oh God, why me?" I wailed. The chosen one gave me an awkward pat on the shoulder. "It'll be okay. At least your destiny isn't a full-time gig like mine." "It's not that. Why is this happening to me?" The gang looked confused. My frustration erupted in words. "I'm the frelling Mary Sue! I hate the Mary Sue! Fix with Mary Sue, suck ass! Oh, I'm so ashamed. Please, God, let this be a dream, or sunstroke, or a coma, or something." "Why does she refer to herself in the third person?" Anya asked. "Ah! I knew their names as if by instinct. This was really gonna blow." "I don't do that. I'm not crazy, just materialistic. I mean enterprising in a gloriously capitalistic way. Mary Sue, try to calm down. We do this kind of thing all the time. We'll help you through it. Xander was attempting to restore my emotional center.
Please, that only works for Scoobies. My name is not Mary Sue. It's no... Yeah, screw it. Call me Mary Sue. I don't want anyone to ever find out about this. You! I spun around and pointed directly at the only other person in the room as stylish and as cool as myself. Spike. Don't you dare tell anyone about this. Don't worry, love. Got you covered. I'm ashamed to be participating in this dribble myself.
Spike showed the intelligence that comes with killer cheekbones and keen fashion sense. I breathed a sigh of relief.
All right. Obviously there's no escape from this hell except to go along with it. Right. I'm Mary Sue, and I'm a 30-year-old potential slayer. I absolutely had to roll my eyes at this point. This explains why I had the urge to buy the entire Time Life series on demons, selected the calendar as my free gift, and left it hanging on my wall, even though it is now years out of date. Hell, I bet I could even speak Cantonese now.
That's excellent, said Giles. I was having difficulty with one of the other girls. She got very upset when I offered her milk, for example, and I have no idea why.
Enough of the chit-chat. Buffy spoke with her usual briskness. Let's get to the dealing with the first part. The prophecy said you could help, so spill. The first evil, huh? Okay, so here's the plan. You obviously need to find a wickedly complex and dangerous spell to summon the first good. This spell will require the talents of, absolutely everyone in or related to or anyone you ever met to the Scooby Gang. The first good will be the equal and opposite force to the first evil. Their being manifested together will cancel out the overwhelming evil thing. Balance will be restored to the world, yada yada yada. The potentials will be safe, and I will be far, far, far from here.
I grinned maniacally, sure that they would quickly toss me out, and I could be on my way. That's so crazy, it just might work! Xander looked around expectantly, waiting for someone to catch the reference.
Brilliant, my dear. Giles smiled approvingly, and I wanted to roll over and let him pet me.
Back to thoughts of escape.
Great. One quick patrol, since it has conveniently gotten dark while we chatted, and I'm out of here. Spike, Buffy, let's go.
I was dying to get this over with. But wait, Willow demanded. Where did we find the spell, and how did you figure that out so fast?
I grinned evilly. By the power of Mary Sue, the spell's in that green leather volume in the second shelf up on the loft. I was totally talking out of my ass, but I knew it would be there. I was getting the hang of this ultimate power thing. As for how I figured it out, well, I'm something much cooler than just a really old potential slayer. I swept the awestruck group with an assessing glance before I threw back my head and said with pride, I'm a technical writer.
They gasped, struck dumb by my fabulousness.
With a toss of my cinnamon-brown locks, I gathered Buffy and Spike and swept out to patrol. As we entered the cemetery, I took a quick peek at Buffy and Spike, tense and a little bit distant, but ready at a moment's notice to fight for each other. Maybe I could use this Mary Sue power to straighten things out.
So, you two need to figure out your relationship, huh?
They looked startled. Listen up. You aren't in love, and this isn't some huge, passionate destiny thing either. You have the respect, camaraderie, and the trust of people who have been through the wars together. Accept it and move on. Face it, you both need to have some simple, uncomplicated affairs with other people right now.
They looked at me with dawning comprehension and relief.
Now it was time for the final blow. Buffy, just go jump Principal Wood. He's incredibly hot and his name is Wood, for God's sake. Go! Buffy looked at Spike briefly for approval. He nodded gleefully and she scampered off. As Mr. Burns would say, excellent. As for you, Spike, my evil grin returned with a vengeance. You come with me. Spike obeyed with a hip-rolling swagger that made me drool. Just as I was reaching for the lapels of his coat to yank him to me, five vampires appeared.
Oh, hell no!
I cried as I quickly leapt past Spike to deliver a spin kick to the head of the first vampire, knocking him to the rest of the pack. That gave me time for a quick one-handed cartwheel over the military grave he'd been standing on, so I could yank the small American flag out of the ground. I could hear all my military ancestors cheering as I used the flag to stamp the vampires one after the other. Spike watched the proceedings from his laid-back perch on a nearby crypt.
Nice spin kick, he drawled. Where'd you learn that one?
So being a potential and a Mary Sue, it was easy enough to whip it out. Now I was really grooving to this gig. I could do anything! Now that that had been taken care of, why don't you come over here and whip out what I want? Spike was happy to oblige, but he wanted to hear me beg first. Tell me exactly where you want it, pet, he growled. You know what I want, and if you don't give it to me right this second, you'll wish the first still had you chained to her wall. Ooh, someone's feeling a bit nasty tonight. Don't worry, love. I've got just what you need right here. He reached into his coat and pulled out a slim volume covered in red leather. That's it, baby, I purred. Give it to me now. Spike opened the book and began to read in a voice hot enough to melt steel and all my inhibitions. Mark but this flea, and mark in this. How little that thou deniest me is. It sucked me first, and now sucks thee. And in this flea our two bloods mingled be. Thou knowest that this cannot be said, a sin, nor shame, nor loss of maidenhead. Yet this enjoys before it woo, and pampered swells with blood made of two. And this, alas, is more than we would do. Oh, stay, three lives, and one flea spare, where we almost, yea, more than married are. This flea is you and I, and this, our marriage bed, and marriage temple is. Though parents grudge and you we're met, and cloistered in these living walls of jet, though use make you apt to kill me, let not to that self-murder added be, and sacrilege, three sins in killing three. Cruel and sudden, hast thou sense purpled thy nail in blood of innocence? Where could this flea guilty be, except in that drop which it sucked from thee? Yet thou triumphest, and sayest that thou findest not thyself, nor me, the weaker now. 'Tis true. Then learn how false fears be. Just so much honor when thou yieldest to me will waste, as this flea's death took life from thee. I swooned with lust and fulfillment, desire personified in sound, filling me to the brink. I knew it couldn't get any better. So are the quick caress across cheekbones that could cut glass, and one fiery kiss. I headed back to my car and out of town. Being a Mary Sue could be the best thing that ever happened to me, as long as no one ever finds out, of course. After all, power corrupts, and I've got a killer evil laugh. Someone please save me. The cherry red Mustang convertible, engine full up of horses, vrooming down the long straight of highway. Yeah, baby, that's more like it. Nothing like stretching out your legs across the vast of prairie, flat as a tabletop and open as... Okay, that's odd. Trees. Lots and lots of trees. Huddled together between the vasty, foresty trees of the Great Plains, a little sign, Smallville, population 40,000. The brakes were tested. Screech! Our heroine, with almost feline grace. Actually, you know, it is feline grace. She moves exactly like a great, big, sleek jungle cat prowling through the forest, her long blonde hair flowing tumultuously in the breeze. She gracefully oozed up to the sign. Cool. Smallville. She took a picture of the sign, although 40K is not exactly small, and hey, suspiciously glowing rock. She bent at the knees in a graceful, ladylike fashion to pick up a green, red, gold, and for good measure, blue glowing rock, which in no way resembled the periodic element kryptonite. Since there was no way it would fit into the pocket of her skin-tight leather pants of evil, she quickly pulled out her travel jeweler's kit and made it into a very unattractive pendant, to be referred to hereafter as the Vop. She hopped back into the car, and the engine leapt to life, although not literally, of course, as she sped down the road and into the quaint and not actually small town of Smallville, the Vop illuminating her face in an eerie and otherworldly green, red, gold, and blue glow. Pondering the nearness of lunch and the length of time since her last bathroom break, the car swung into a parking space in front of a delightful Art Deco coffee house. She took a picture and then dashed into the coffee house. Tap, tap, tap. Nice place. Glance around. Whoa, pink! A beautiful young woman wearing a pink fuzzy sweater, a pink cotton shirt, pink silk skirt, pink tights, pink Mary Janes, pink lipstick, and a pink button that read, "Asteroids ruined my life. Ask me how." "Hi," said the young woman, her beautiful violet eyes a tremble,
her beautiful violet eyes a-tremble with burgeoning tears. Her face filled with the eternal sorrow of the Madonna. My name is Lana, and my parents were killed when I was 3, which makes me sad. I was dressed as a fairy princess, and if I could grant myself one wish, it would be to bring them back to life, so I could be happy again, because my short life has been blighted with sorrow, and the only way I can find a little itsy bits of happiness is by running this cafe, which is where my parents met, except it was a movie house at the time, and if there was anything I can do to help you, let me know. Her head bobbed thoughtfully. Pink Mojo Jojo. Where's the bathroom? Said our heroine, her beautiful blue eyes, which normally flashed like sapphires, glazing over. Lana's beautiful, tear-filled eyes rolled sorrowfully. The ladies' room, which is for customers only, is behind that pillar next to Clark, who has some sort of secret that he will not tell me, which I do not understand, because I tell him everything, and it is very important that everyone be absolutely honest with me and tell me everything about themselves, because I hate secrets, because they make me feel insecure, and if the people do not tell me their every single thought, then clearly they do not love me, and perhaps that the secret that they are keeping is that they wish to leave me, and I would be alone and unloved and abandoned in this cafe that I run, although I am only 16, but my friend Lex lent me the money to run the Talon because it is a good business proposition, and he's my friend, although I am not sure that I trust or like him, because he's a Luther and he has secrets, and I think that... Thanks, said our heroine. I'll have a Coke. We began edging towards the bathroom, jigging her left leg in a very rapid pattern. Oh, don't you want a coffee? The Talon sells all sorts of coffee beverages because there is nothing that people in a small Midwestern town love more than a wide assortment of coffee beverages like espresso and mocha, and Coke is fine. As our heroine's nerve broke, and she made a dash for the bathroom. Later, she stared at herself in the mirror. She mused that I want to take this lighting with me everywhere. She was illuminated in a soft, warm, Vaseline glow of light. Every pore porcelain smoothed into non-existence. Her golden eyes glowing softly in the soft light, and her hair was a perfectly coiffed mane of cascading red-gold curls. Damn, I'm freaking gorgeous. I want to live in this bathroom. She poked her cheek briefly. Maybe it's a Mary Sue thing. Whatever. Emily went out to face her adoring public. The 3 pale, gaunt, beautiful boy poets who had been composing odes to Lana in a corner of the room paused in their Lana duration, awed by the sight of our heroine. Mary Sue, obviously a woman of destiny and possessor of a very large vup. Byron rewrote, she walks in beauty on the spot. Percy lined out Lana's name from a valediction to a meteor. Keats fainted from the stress. Strange, frail boy. Clark Kent, who was made of sterner stuff, was nevertheless torn. Should he exchange the gayest look of the story with Lex, who was just coming into the Talon? If only he could tell Lex his secrets. Should he look adoringly at Lana? If only he could tell Lana his secrets. Should he simultaneously faint, go evil, lose his powers, or hum Billie Holiday songs from the effects of the Vup? Since he was, and is, super cool, he did all of the above. Nice pants. Mary Sue turned to look at the incredibly attractive and obviously stunned at her incredibly Mary Sue beauty, talent, and overall superior intelligence. Bald guy standing before her. I'm Lex Luthor. He was wearing a lavender silk shirt, purple pants, and sexy smirk number 3. LexCorp patent pending. Of course you are. She smiled blindingly at him. However, Luther's ever prepared. Lex whipped out stylish shades. Yada, yada, yada. At that moment, the 3 poets, whose babysitter it should, dear readers, it be explained, had been reading great works of poetry to them when the meteors hit, lo, the many years ago, snapped. Declaring that the 3 of them could not have Mary Sue, then no poet, or potential patron of poets, would. They sprang into a feral and frothing attack of frenzy. It was frightful. Her topaz eyes flashing, Mary Sue sneered, and flipped into proto-slayer speed augmented by fast-acting kryptonite mutation action. Pow, bam, bang, kazoo! The floor was littered with bleeding romantic poets. And plus, the Talon was totally trashed. The crowds cheered. Yay! Clark sighed. He'd wanted to save Mary Sue, but she'd just been too fast for him. Darn it. No, wait. The red kryptonite kicked in. This blows! He gave both Mary Sue and Lex a long, lingering, anatomically impossible look. Let's go play alien abduction. Mary Sue glanced at Lex, and then Clark. It's good to be Mary Sue. Arm in arm, the 3 walked free of the wreckage, leaving behind the faint sniffles of Fairy Princess Lana. Words cannot describe or even do justice to the events that followed at the mansion, although what Lex, Clark, and Mary Sue experienced bore some similarity to pages 25 through 34 of Silhouette's special edition Millionaire in Disguise, and then pages 78 through 82 of Deception, and then, for a change of pace, pages 117 through 124 of Silhouette Desire, Unfinished Rhapsody, which is technically a backup scene, but very nice, then pages 179 to 184 of Mills and Boone, Dark Pursuit, and pages 177 to 180 of Harlequin Presents Tainted Love, and then wrapping up various and sundry scenes from Mr. Hyde's assets. It should be mentioned that one bonfire, six fireplaces, and 40,000 candles, one for each resident of Smallville, lost their lives over the course of the evening.
Wow, said Lex as he leaned back on the couch. I had no idea romance novels were this descriptive.
He put down Mr. Hyde's assets. Mary Sue swirled her ruby-red wine glass and then slipped a swallow of Nibom Coppola Rubicon 1999, which tastes like pure ruby sin in a wine glass. Therefore, Lex had 40 cases. Mary Sue had a bite of rich chocolate cake, which she knew with her increased slayer-in-waiting, fast-acting kryptonite mutant metabolism would never make it to her perfectly fat-free thighs. Clark was blowing smoke rings with his eyes, because, as dear reader, the story shall shortly tell and not show, in the midst of reading, Clark had been forced to admit to being an alien, which, as it turned out, was totally okay with Lex, and they had all agreed to be best gosh-darn friends forever. Mary Sue explained the whole Krypton explosion, spacecraft, superpowers thing, and reenacted her favorite scene from Lois and Clark, complete with eyeglass props. All was right with the world. Just then, Lionel Luther flung back the magnificent oaken doors to the magnificent living room magnificently. He looked at the pile of romance novels and sneered, domineering sneer number 73, now with new flowers in the attic vibe add-on. A patent of Luther Corporation. Pah! Romance novels! I should have expected as much. He was about to pat Lex on the shoulder when he saw Mary Sue, who smiled brilliantly and leaned back on the couch, Mary Sue-ness oozing from every inch of her slender and yet voluptuous body, curling through every lock of her red, red mane of tempestuous hair. My God, you are a magnificent bastard. She tossed him a romance novel. Page 115. Lionel flipped open the book. You have good taste, my dear. Lionel Shark smiled and poured himself a glass of sin, and he began to read aloud. In the morning, it was a tired but happy Mary Sue who uploaded her pictures and blogged the entire experience. Bid goodbye to Lex and Clark. They, of course, begged her to stay, because how could they go on with their lives without the shining light of her presence? But she knew that they had each other. Good luck, you crazy kids, she said, and shyly handed Lex a copy of her resume and a writing sample, because future evil geniuses should always document their fiendish devices. How else can they ensure that their devilishly foul devices observe architectural principles and are quality-focused, integrated, observe privacy and security standards, are 100% available, scalable, and have high performance and control costs? They can't. Documentation. It's important. This message brought to you by a Society of Mary Sue Technical Communicators. Mary Sue slid bonelessly into her car as she left town. She began to sing along to I Am the Very Model of a Modern Major Cherry Pop-Tart. Pausing only to stop by the Kent farm, whoop Pa Kent upside the head, give him the number for Platitudes Anonymous, and hand Ma Kent a stack of really, really good romance novels. Intermission. Cross the vast and lonely plains of insert elf word here. The solitary track led its isolated way betwixt rolling dunes of white powdered dust and darkly grown sage. Distant mountains, purple prose stood to the right and the left. Empty of all life the plains were, except for a hearty band of stalwart and true travelers, intent upon their mission to create a fictional trope that could be copyrighted and hereafter used by all band of hardy hero stories forever. Ranger, check. Knight, check. Impossibly beautiful elf, check. Wizard, check. Cleric, does the wizard count? Thief, check. Twice. Dwarf, check. Normal schmoes, who nevertheless drive the action of the story, check. And sidekick, check. MacGuffin that must be destroyed, delivered to a specific spot? Check, precious. Check, precious. Beautiful, precious. Precious. This fellowship of travelers paused in their walking across the plains to light a small fire and eat a small supper of roast coney. They then resumed walking for many miles on the lonesome aloof and in the Styx track across the powdery white soil and sagebrush. They stopped at a fine example of a standing stone at a crossroads and ate a dinner of coney stew and travel bread. The travelers were rightly soiled from the day's travel, except for Legolas, whose garments were spotlessly clean. Night passed. After a fine breakfast of porridge, the fellowship continued their journey of walking and walking. Supper, walking, dinner, sleep, walking, walking, eat, walk, eat, walk, eat, sleep. They paused at the sound of a distant roar. Legolas and Aragorn's far-sighted eyes scanned the horizon. In the distance, a red speck, closer and closer, the sound of a discordant and dissonant voice. I get my kicks on Route 66! Closer. A cherry red demon, guided by a beautiful woman, her soft skin like magnolias, gently glowing in the noon light, green eyes flashing like imperial green gem-quality jade, long, long, long white hair fluttering in the gentle 90-mile-an-hour breeze of her passage. The demon passed the travelers on the track, kicking up a cloud of white dust in its passage that covered the fellowship and the sage and even Precious, oh, Precious, in a white layer of earth, weeping. Legolas wiped the dust from his eyes. No longer the prettiest, he cried. And each member of the fellowship, homoerotic and homosocial tensions notwithstanding, sighed the heart-deep sigh of pure love. Then they started walking again. An even shorter plot. Ah, wine country at last. I knew I was desperate for a decent bottle of wine after taking that extreme shortcut through Middle-earth to get from Kansas to Northern California in one day. But the dusty road would be totally worth it if I could snag a bottle of Ferrari Carano Fumi Blanc. Wait, what was I thinking? I'm Mary Sue. I'm richer than God. I'd buy a couple of cases and be prepared to seduce the cute young thing and all his friends that I came across. I pulled my cherry red convertible, still purring like a kitten, into the parking lot of the winery, which looked remarkably like an Italian villa made of marble. It's amazing what you can do with unlimited funds. I swung out of the car with the grace and flexibility of an Olympic gymnast, and walked across the tasting room with thoughts of the luscious wine soon to be rolling across my tongue. These pleasant thoughts were rudely interrupted by the sharp crack of a 357 and a burning pain in my chest. "This bites," I said before slowly sinking to the ground. No, yelled a tall, lanky, and yet handsome in a raw-boned, geeky sort of way man as he ran up and caught me before I hit the ground. His hair was oddly spiky, and his orange t-shirt said something about raining in hell, but I didn't care, because he was kneeling on the grass, holding me gently, and weeping tears of rage. The world started to go black. Why, God? How could you do this? How could you let this perfectly beautiful, intelligent, strong, and stylishly dressed woman die like this? Please, don't die! I'll do anything! I can't let you go! Hobbs, can't you do anything? He was really cute when he was devastated. A shorter man with dark hair came up and put his hand on the other's shoulder. I'm sorry, Fox. Sometimes fate is a cruel mistress. This lovely lady just happened to come to a winery which was a front for Arnold's latest evil scheme and get caught in the crossfire when we tried to stop him. It's a damn shame. She's the best and brightest of us all. She'll be sadly missed. The man holding me could no longer contain his grief, and sobs racked his body. Strangely enough, this loss of control also turned him transparent. But that could have been my imagination, because it was getting really dark, and oh, look, a bright shiny light at the end of the tunnel. I floated away to check it out, and left the hottie to his tears. In the end, there can be only one. But before that, more than one. Cold, hard metal on her naked spine. Mary Sue opened her eyes, blackest night dark, fringed lush with lashes that flirted with creamy white cheeks. Sweet, sweet oxygen rushed into starved lungs. Breathing, good. She was pretty sure she'd been dead a moment ago. Apparently she'd gotten better. And naked. And freaking freezing! She carefully glanced around the room. Corpsicles on slabs laid out for investigations. Coroners on a smoke break or something. She lithely jumped off the examination table and efficiently tied her sheet into a chiton. Which she totally knew how to do, because she was immortal. Mary Sue was not her name. She had had many names. Maria Souza, Maria Sudater, Magda Anna Akarena, Elisabetta Katarina Sudovich, Sumeria, the clan Mixu. So many, many names, so many identities over the vast, echoing centuries. She was over 2,000 years old. No, wait, over 4,000 years old. She was really, really old, and knowledgeable. Oh, the ennui of it all. There was nothing that she hadn't done. There was that 20 years she'd spent studying Kung Fu with a Shaolin mystic. The 30 years she'd spent studying Mongoche dueling with that really cute honey of a Spaniard. Not that one, the other one. The 150 years she'd spent at that really nice day spa at the island near Crete. damn shame about the volcano. The 10 years she'd spent as a Venetian courtesan perfecting the art of love. Veronica Franco, whatever. The 50 years she'd spent as Vengeance Sioux of the Varangia. After the city that she'd founded on the banks of the Dnieper River was destroyed. Flush toilets 2,000 years ahead of their time. Damn Mongols. But she didn't like to think about it. Would the blood never come off her hands? The 60 years she'd spent learning the fine art of documentation from the finest writers in ancient Egypt. Old Kingdom, not new. The 40 years she'd spent studying air movement with that old wacko in a cave. Catch an arrow at 50 paces she could. Walk on rice paper without a mark. Catch flies out of the air like nobody's business. Yeah, she was a kick-ass fighter, all right. Only augmented by the fact that she'd been a potential slayer before she died for the first time. And now, what with the kryptonite mutation? Oh, neat. X-ray vision. There was nothing that she couldn't do. She decided to leave. After a time that seemed too long, but very short, she put one foot in front of the other, and she was walking with an innate and primal feminine power. She didn't bother to find clothes. With her chitin tying skills, taught to her by an ancient and venerable fashion consultant mystic, in horse-rearing Troy before the walls fell, her chitin looked like the finest of fashion plate garments, despite being a corner sheet tied off with a piece of twine. With her innate sense of direction, she went to the car compound and snagged her cherry red convertible out of lockup, put on some shoes, and headed on down the road towards beautiful downtown Seacouver. Brief pause for a blog photo. Feeling a bit rusty, what with the being dead and all, she decided to stop at that quaint little dojo right over there. She swerved to avoid the plot anvil lying there in the road. Heaven knows what that'd have done to her baby. She patted the convertible. As she climbed the stairs, Mary Sue felt the double whammy of a double quickening. Two immortals for the price of... Actually, she hadn't paid anything. So technically... No, wait, whatever. She pulled her ivory-handled basket rapier out of eye space, the space-time fold where immortals store their swords, and turned to face two really cute guys coming up the stairs behind her. "I'm Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod," said the tallish, loomish one. The shorter, dark-haired one, who'd been standing somewhat behind MacLeod, waved. "Adam Pearson." "Wow! Adam Pearson! I've read your paper. The New World of Autonomous Discourse, Plato and Writing and Computers. I'm Mary Sue, and I'm your biggest fan," she gushed charmingly as she put her sword back into eye space. "Really?" Adam said as he stepped out from behind MacLeod, who was looking slightly perturbed. "Yeah, actually I've read everything of yours that I could find. As a fellow preliterate, I'd be fascinated to discuss your thinking on the neotic roles of heroic heavy figures in preliterate tradition. Or, you know, blogging." Mary Sue ran long, slender fingers through her short, shiny cap of hair, so black it was almost blue. But it was black, really, and really, really shiny. Perhaps you'd like to go out for a beer, then, to discuss primacy and orality and all that. "I'm the hero of the story," said MacLeod. "Actually, I could use a bit of a workout. Did this morning, you know." Mary smiled apologetically at Adam. MacLeod left in an almost literal haze of disgust, muttering, "Go get your own, Mary Sue. Generally one hanging out in a church or a graveyard, all revengery. My lost lovery. Yeah, been there. Bought the toga, which, by the way, nice." Adam smiled at Mary Sue approvingly. Mary Sue graciously decided not to correct Adam, because, well, old or not, he was a guy, so he had no reason to know a toga from a chitin. "Okay, there's way too much plot here. Can we just cut to the gratuitous sex? My place is around the corner," said Adam. 20 hours later, Adam and Mary Sue sat lotus position motionless on a hard wooden floor of his apartment. Having worked their way through all 7 of the tantric chakras, they'd been in a state of perfect bliss in the 7th top of the head chakra for the last 8 hours. But enough is enough. Since beer or wine would have been irrelevant, Mary Sue gave Adam her number back home and headed out on her travels for the day. Good, clean fun. What to do today? As a really, really old immortal, potential slayer who was augmented by kryptonite mutation, I need something a little more exotic than my last few adventures. Time for a costume change. I briefly pulled over to put on my leather waist cinch of evil, straightened the midnight cascade of hair which fell to my waist, and add some gothy makeup, such as lipstick, that glowed the dark, lustrous red of a fine old Merlot, black eyeliner that made my emerald eyes even more mysterious, and black nail polish, just to be true to form. Back in the car, I gunned the engine, shifted into F, and took off high above the trees, heading east. 2 shakes of a lamb's tail, I was landing into a whomping big tree, in front of Hogwarts School of Wizardry. I leapt from the car without bothering to open the door and landed with my feet apart and the 3-inch spike heels of my black leather boots miraculously not sinking into the verdant lawn. I sauntered over to the trunk of my baby, gave her a quick thump with my fist, and pulled out my robe from the now open trunk. The midnight black silk settled over my shoulders with a swirl, but I didn't fasten the front because black leather waist cinches and the curves they display so nicely were meant to be seen. I flicked the trunk closed and walked with feline grace over the entrance where Dumbledore was waiting for me. "Welcome, my dear. We're so glad you could substitute as the defense for dark arts teacher on such short notice." His kindly old eyes held a wicked gleam, but I couldn't blame him. I was me, after all. "No problem," I replied. I was looking for a change of pace, anyway. "Let me show you to your classroom." He held out his arm in a courtly gesture that I remembered so well from gentler times. I took it with a happy little smile of nostalgia. His slow pace gave me time to add plenty of swish with my hips as we strolled through the constantly changing corridors to the classrooms. Boys goggled and girls sighed everywhere I went, but I ignored them with ease. I mean, come on, they're children, for pity's sake. We entered the classroom, however. I saw something more to my taste. "Hello, dark nurse," I murmured, casting a long, slow look up and down the raven-haired man coming before me. "Mary Sue, I'd like you to meet Professor Snape, our potions master." Dumbledore performed the introduction quickly. "Such an observant gentleman." I held out my hand. "Welcome, Mary Sue. I'm sure we'll all benefit from your talents," Snape sneered. I grinned. His feeble attempt to hide his overwhelming lust for me was adorable. "I'm sure we'll get a chance to discuss my talents later," I offered. "Oh yes, he will be mine." Snape and Dumbledore left as the students began filing in. A group full of 15-year-olds. "Joy." I was pretty sure I could come up with some novel ways to kill things that would distract them from their adolescent worship of me. Once they were all in their seats, I pointed imperiously to a bright-looking boy with glasses and a funny scar. He blushed quite prettily before he replied, "Yes, ma'am?" "First of all, don't call me ma'am. Call me professor or mistress, or something else cool and powerful. Second, tell me what you were working on with your last professor." "Yes, mistress." "Okay, I could get used to this. We were working on protections against the bug bladder beast of Troll." I smirked. "Way too easy! Okay, I can cover this in about 2 seconds. Close your eyes. The beast is so stupid, it thinks that if you can't see it, it can't see you. All right, let's move on to something more interesting." The students looked a bit nonplussed, but they needed to learn to roll with the punches anyway. "Let's talk about Mkthral demons. They're made of fire, but can't be stopped using the usual fire retardant spells. Instead, you need to..." I broke off when I realized the kids were looking at me frightened, which was peculiar, because I hadn't even described the horrible mutilations usually suffered by people who attempted to fight a Mkthral demon. "What's wrong?" The girl with riotously curly hair in the first row spoke up. Big surprise there. "Actually, some sort of fire demon has been terrorizing the school for the past 2 weeks. No one can figure out what it is or how to stop it. Several students have been horribly mutilated." "Wow, I had hit the jackpot on the first try. Go me." "I see. I guess I better take care of this little problem for you." I reached into iSpace, past my sword, for my wand. It was nice ebony wood, with silver inlay matching my outfit perfectly. "Students, please gather on the left side of the room, away from the door. I've got plans later that do not include taking any of you to the infirmary." They shuffled off to one side like a good little herd of sheep, although a few showed some initiative by taking out their wands just in case, Hermione and Harry being the first two. No wonder they managed to get out of so many jams. But back to business at hand. "First, I'm going to create an ice statue of myself to lure the demon here. Issicus simulacrum perfectus." A little wand wave, and there I was, perfectly rendered in prismatic ice. Next, the demon shows up. I counted my head to 10, and the beast burst through the door just as I was finishing. Well over 8 feet tall and glowing with red-gold flames, the creature was a textbook example of a Mkthral demon. I knew that Time Life series would come in handy someday. The beast roared, so I had to raise my voice a bit to finish the lecture. "Next, I use the transmogrifier spell to merge the demon with the ice statue and render it immobile. Morgaphicus stificus." Another little wand wave, and the demon merged with the statue, or in other words, shrank a couple feet, and was encased in ice. Now comes the fun part. I slipped my wand back into ice space and pulled out my sword. You can use whatever's handy, but I prefer to use my sword because I like the feel of the hilt in my hand as I kill stuff. I decided to show off a bit for the kiddies and leapt into the air, spun around, and whipped my sword out in a thunderous strike across the frozen beast, which shattered into a million pieces in a really satisfying way. You students can clean that up, and no homework tonight. They started cheering, which was nice and all, but I had a professor to seduce.
So I left them there and went in search of Snape. I found him in the potions lab, which was a dreary place, full of mysterious bottles and bubbling cauldrons. However, I was carrying a bottle myself, one that could cure all of Snape's ills. "Hello, Snape," I purred as I stalked across the floor towards him. He was starting to look gratifyingly nervous. "Mary Sue, I didn't expect to see you so soon. Finished with the dark arts already?" He smirked quite well for a man who would soon be a slave to my wiles. "Oh, yes. I got rid of that pesky fire demon for you and left the children to clean up." He looked impressed, but he hadn't seen anything yet. I thought we could have that discussion of my talents we spoke of earlier. I was right in front of him now, and I could see him trying hard to stay calm and nonchalant. "Your talents? What talents do you have to show me?" "I happen to have a deft touch with potions myself. Here's one I think you'll really enjoy." I pulled out a cobalt blue bottle filled with botanical shampoo I'd made myself. "You'll feel like a whole new man without that grease in your hair." I grinned in invitation and saw his eyes flicker in acquiescence. "I'll even show you how it's done. Your shower or mine?" "Mine is closer, I believe." He took my arm, and we adjourned to his chambers for an afternoon, evening, and night, and early morning of hot, wet fun that doesn't belong in a children's book. I left him limp and begging for more, but it was time to move on. Enough with kid stuff. I was ready for the big time. The amorality of the immorally relative span. Not that things ever turn out quite like I expect. I'd been having a great time. I mean, what's not to like? I was an incredibly old, immortal technical writer, with apparently oodles of money in the bank. No fictional character was safe from my nefarious ways, x-ray vision, pyro abilities thus far not demonstrated, but existing because I've always liked fire, a really neato sword, a magic wand, a tiny nose, and incredibly perky brass. Cue impossibly cute flip of mint green hair over right shoulder. My god, I'm so cute. I can't help but love me. I must be incredibly annoying. Oh well. I was thinking, I'm on a road trip and feeling fine. I drove from California to France. How cool is that? Ooh, mime! There's a random mime just standing on a random street in France. This was just too cool. As sure as my name is Mary Sue, I'm going to take his picture and war block it. This was my last chapter mistake. How was I to know that the frelling, freaking, friggin' mime was a Lu Sheng Jiaofmao Yung Do Section 1 agent? This so blows! Quick as some disgusting and yet colorful metaphor involving geese and fat and strings, they had me strapped to some sort of weird metal chair thingy. God, it was so embarrassing. I'm the Mary Sue. They should love and worship me. Damn it! Why am I so important to the plot? Why would I do this to myself, other than all the incredibly flattering attention that I've been getting from all the fictional and incredibly cool characters? And forget I asked. Nikita strode into the room, her eyes shaded from the impossibly white lights by a totally Catwoman pair of shades. I wonder where she got them. Your choice is simple. I rolled my eyes. It's always a simple choice with Section 1. You can either spend the rest of your life strapped to this incredibly uncomfortable chair, or you can use your unique abilities to help us destroy Chartreuse Mist. There was a slight background buzz. Nikita paused. Wait, no. This week we will be eliminating Amethyst Cloud, a very dangerous terrorist organization. I pondered my options. On one hand, I'm an impossibly old immortal who had spent the last several thousand years training to be an absolutely kick-ass fighter, because I am going to be the Frelling One, and who was a potential slayer before she died for the first time, and has some really cool kryptonite mutations, and, you know, magic powers, and I could tell them exactly where Amethyst Cloud was, and kill every last one of them single-handed. Nikita would probably invite me over to her place for red wine full of smooth mouthfeel, which was nice in a way. But I didn't actually swing in that direction, and I didn't sign up for slash fiction. Yeah, anyway. Burcroft's cute, and all geeky and stuff, and no, that's it, no. I think you will find that if you contact the center that I am in fact Mr. Jones, as well as a senior partner and quite possibly the first evil. In fact, I'm incorporeal. I stylishly stepped out of my restraints, clad entirely head to toe in black leather. We're talking cute little black leather boots, with cute glued-on tight leather pants, and a leather corset, but you know, tasteful, and some sort of leather necklace chain thing. And since, you know, boots made for walking, I walked through the wall into the main area of Section 1. Nikita followed me via the door, her face wreathed in worry. Wait, you can't do this. They'll kill you. They control all of us. My vertigo-inducing rainbow-hued eyes narrowed dangerously. Honey, I'm the Mary Sue. I think you'll find that I can do whatever the hell I want, and everyone in this story will freaking love me for it. Heck, you want to see Michael smile? Michael, come over here.
Michael loped across the white tile floor, his hair a mass of confusion, his face a stony mask of not showing any expressionlessness. Listen to this. I then proceeded to tell an extremely long and boring story about my last assignment at work, earwax and the etymology of the word friend across all the romance languages, which I have, dear reader, cut from this version because it is all of 30 pages of immense tediousness. Immense. Tedious. Word. Michael was, of course, utterly convulsed in laughter. Face crinkled and cracked, big belly laughing laughter. It was totally out of character. They had to carry him off in a stretcher. It wasn't pretty. He'd be a broken man until the reset button was struck. See, I said, how the hell do I blow this space? Oh, duh. I snapped my fingers and I was standing next to my cherry red convertible. This is more, oh, hell. My hands passed right through the steering wheel. I'm incorporeal, this sucks. I tapped my long, silver skull-wearing, slender fingers together, each moment like unto eternity of boring. Hey, I'm not the first evil anymore. Nothing. I'm no longer a higher life form. I'd have rested my head on the steering wheel, but my silky chestnut locks went straight through it. God, I've ascended to a higher life form. Shoot me now. Thankfully, the Scoobies, having finally finished the first casting contract negotiation with every single character of any importance that has ever appeared on the series, cast the impossibly difficult Trey Uber's Ultra Slayer spell summoning the first good. And if I may say, hello and ultimate goodness, nurse. Hubba, hubba, hubba. I describe what happened next, but dear reader, your eyeballs would cook in their own eye sockets with the heat of my description. Let's just say that we drove off into the sunset and leave it at that, shall we? And with a winkle of her impossibly cute little nose, Mary Sue was free. Free at last! Until the sequel. The return of fiery teenage Mary Sue. This time, vengeance is personal, harder, and involves more guns. And a mirror.